This is the Motion Martial Arts Podcast. On today's episode, we discuss the question, are martial arts really for everyone? Thanks for listening. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
We are back.
Yeah, today we're going to talk about a question that I'm sure everybody has maybe heard or asked out loud or maybe said internally, which is the question is, martial arts actually for everyone? And it's a pretty complicated question.
Yeah, definitely.
In some ways, I think yes, but in other ways, I think no. And that's why we're going to have this conversation.
Sure, yeah. One of the distinctions right off the bat that I think is useful to make is the difference between self-defense and martial arts. Right, martial arts kind of are applied to self-defense, but you can practice self-defense without doing any martial arts.
Yeah, we have a podcast in the past where we talked about all this. Yeah, so you guys can go back and kind of listen to that episode to go really in depth with it, but we can still talk about it a little bit right now.
Yeah, I guess the simplest, you know, it's kind of a surface level way of looking at that is just that like so much of self-defense is about prevention, right? About just kind of being aware of and not putting yourself in dangerous situations. A really good example of this, I have a friend who lives in Philadelphia, kind of a nice part of Philadelphia, and his neighbor was using a brick to keep the lid of his trash can down. And he went to his neighbor and he asked him if he could use a bungee cord instead, because he said, like, you really don't want just like a like something that can be used to break into your house just to be sitting out there all the time. Just doesn't make, it's like, that's what I would call good self-defense. Like, it's a pretty good decision. It's like, it's probably a good idea if we don't have a brick sitting right here.
Yeah.
Because it's tempting. You know, it's, you make it easier for somebody to break into your property by putting that there.
Well, I mean, that leads to a whole nother question, though, a conversation, which is the whole concept of how easy it is actually to break into a house, which is like, what do they say? Locking the door is actually for peace of mind. It actually doesn't do anything to prevent.
Yeah.
Somebody doing a breaking and entering, it's way too easy to break into somebody's house. Same thing with the alarm system. It's more like for peace of mind than it actually prevents anybody from doing any sort of criminal act towards you.
Sure.
But yeah. Like, again, self-defense, I agree with that, is kind of for everyone. Again, even with that, I think it's only kind of, I think everybody could benefit from it, but like you have to kind of like, so you need, this is a deep conversation. You need to have an ego to a certain extent to be successful, whether that's in anything. So to have successful self-defense, successful martial arts, you kind of need an ego. Yeah. It's just the way it kind of works, but that's a whole nother deep conversation. Mm-hmm. But in order to successfully train self-defense or martial arts, you kind of have to be able, I feel like, to use your ego in the right way, not the wrong way.
Yeah.
And I think that there's too many people that are, I don't know, I think their egos are too big. So, like, or maybe they're just in denial or whatever. It's like, I don't know if training will actually do anything for them because they have this kind of like, well, that won't happen to me. Sure. Or I'll get so angry that it doesn't matter. Like what this person does to me, I can stop them because I'll get so angry, sort of thing.
It's like average male, 95% less effective in a fight than this is.
Yeah. Just there's so many just different factors into it. But like, I also think that there's a lot of really bad self-defense out there. So it's like, is it good to throw somebody into a bad self-defense situation and then give them this false sense of confidence? But this is
we'll get to that another time.
Well, it's stuff that we've talked about in that self-defense episode. If you guys want to go back and listen to it a lot more in depth,
I'm sure one will revisit in the future. But I guess just to get into martial arts training, whether or not that's something that's for everyone, I think that, you know, my position on it is just that if it's not something that you enjoy, you know, I just really don't think that, you know, it makes sense to practice martial arts. You know, I think at the end of the day, and even if you take it up, maybe you try it, you know, you dabble in it a bit, but in terms of you maintaining, you know, like consistent training over a period of many years, you know, it's just, I don't think that really happens with people if it's not something that they enjoy, if they don't like doing it in some way. So, and I, you know, I've been a teacher for 5 years now. It's like, there's just a lot of people that kind of, they just don't, you know, they try it, but they don't really fall in love with it. They don't really like it. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's like, that's just not for you. You're probably better off spending your time doing something else, pursuing a different hobby.
This is the reality, and I don't think that it gets talked about enough, is how hard it is to actually train.
Sure.
Training is hard. Training sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Training is not a consistently fun activity. It can be fun for sometimes, but it's not a consistently fun activity. And if it is consistently fun, there's probably something wrong with your training.
Sure.
Like the that's just my personal opinion, but like that means that if it's consistently fun, that means that you're probably not spending enough time working on the things that are problems for your personal development.
Yeah. It also means definitely not the word to you. Because it's hard work, you know, it should be grueling. You should be pushing yourself and trying to kind of overcome your limitations, and that's not a pleasant process.
Physically, you need to be pushing yourself emotionally, mentally. It's not a fun process. So, like, there has to be something that is motivating you and driving you to go and do this consistently.
Sure.
Like, because for people that are really dedicated, I feel like training is no different than brushing your teeth. You're just like, this is something that needs to be done. And definitely, for people that have kids who are training, or they have kids that they hope to train, I think that that's a huge part of getting your kids to understand the importance of martial arts and self-defense, is try to keep it fun, but make it kind of understood that this is just something that you do for yourself, the same way that you brush your teeth, you take baths or showers. It's like, this is an activity that you have to do to make yourself into the best version of yourself that's possible. Yeah,
and there is a sense over time, you know, when you've trained for long enough, and you know, you've been doing jiu-jitsu for 8 years now.
Yeah, it'll be 9 later this year.
Right, so. I started as a kid, so it's not.
Yeah, and I did martial arts as a kid, though. That's true, too. So it's not like jiu-jitsu was my first martial arts experience, but for me personally, and we've talked about this in the past, I did martial arts as a kid, and then I kind of shifted towards music. And in my opinion, there's only so many activities that you can really dedicate yourself to.
Definitely.
And that's just my personality, too, is that I'm somebody that throws myself into things very deeply. If I'm like, I like this comic book writer, I want to read all of his comic books or explore it.
Sure.
If I'm like, oh, I like this band, I want to listen to all their music.
You delve deep, you don't dabble.
Yeah. And I'm like, so it's a personal thing, obviously.
Yeah.
But I threw myself into music, and then I came back to jiu-jitsu, and I threw myself into jiu-jitsu now for 9 years, and I think that for me, it's probably going to be a lifelong endeavor.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, the reality is that that is not for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Some, like especially once you're an adult, like, I say this all the time, is like, so there's different schools for different people, and this is true, and there's different martial art styles for different people.
Yep.
Well, there are some schools that I pretty much view them as being the equivalent of pizza, fast food, ice cream, soda. So
in internet slang, a McDojo.
Sometimes that term doesn't make sense to me from what I see people describing it as on the internet. And we should probably do a whole episode on the McDojo thing.
Yeah.
But to me, it's more along, like, I think there's schools that would not be considered a McDojo that do that, the same thing that I'm talking about, which is that they allow people to just come in and be like, I'm going to avoid all the parts of training I don't like. Yeah. I'm just going to walk in, do the little part of training that I like, which maybe is just live training. I'm just going to do the live training, and then I'm going to leave.
Sure.
So I'm just going to show up. I'm going to spar. I'm not going to do any of the other aspect of it. So I'm not going to do any of the warm-up/workout. I'm not going to do any of the technique stuff, the drilling stuff. I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
I'm an adult. I can do what I want. I'm an adult. If I want to eat pizza and ice cream every day, I can eat pizza and ice cream every day. And then I think that there's schools that are like, I call them like your healthy eating habits, or your fruits and vegetables, whatever you're getting in as your protein, your complex carbohydrate source. And those schools, it's like, well, you might not like this thing, but this is what we do. Like you might not like drilling. You might not like the other aspect of things. So some people are like, I don't like the warm-ups, because the warm-ups, I get in shape just from sparring alone. So I don't want to do that. I don't like that. Or it's just too hard. I have no interest in it. Yeah. Well, no, you have to do this. You can't just bypass it. And if you do bypass and you have a legitimate reason why you missed it, well, you better come in with a good attitude and work hard.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, somebody's going to pull you aside at some point. But, hey, I just don't think this is the school for you. Yeah. You're consistently showing up late. You're blowing off this aspect. Like, it's not fair to everybody else who shows up on time for you to walk into class 25 minutes late and just jump into the middle of class.
Yeah, no. So, you know, you're talking about people trying to train on their own terms.
Yeah.
And I think there's, for all of us, there's a time that will come, you know, that if you train for long enough, and especially with the, maybe not for everyone, but I guess it depends on the direction you want to go. I mean, for me, I've kind of been forced to train mostly on my own since I started running my own school because, you know, it's harder for me. Can't really train with in my teacher's classes because I hold them. I'm running a business too. I hold them at the same time that he has them.
Yeah.
Of course, I've moved my schedule around to make that Saturday morning jiu-jitsu class with you guys.
Yeah.
I do what I can, and I definitely, you know, train with my own students, so I'm not always completely alone. But it's something I know I've talked about a lot in the past, that, you know, it's, I think maybe just because of where I'm at in my training and just martial arts in general, that I do think that there comes a time when you've been training for long enough that it really makes sense to start to make your training very much your own, where you're really just, you know, pursuing the kinds of things that that suit the goals that you personally want to reach, you know. And I think that, all right, just to go back to the sense of fun and enjoyment, is martial arts fun and a source of enjoyment? You know, I would agree that there are some things that are fun in your training, but a lot of your training is not fun, you are not training the right way. You're not pushing yourself hard enough.
Yeah.
You know, if you always are just like excited and happy to do everything you're doing in your training, then I would definitely say you're not training the right way. But I would say that there is a sense of enjoyment that I get from it, from doing things that I don't like, kind of that aren't fun. There's still a sense of enjoyment or a sense of meaning and accomplishment that you get from it. You know, it's kind of like, saying earlier, I kind of get the impression that it's like you'd say that you love jiu-jitsu, but you don't enjoy it. It's kind of almost like...
I think I do enjoy it. I love it and I do enjoy it. But I just think that, like, to have the discipline to actually improve...
Yeah.
That sort of training, which I try to do as often as possible, there's lots of parts of it that are extremely unfun.
Sure.
Where you're like, I need to add this move into my repertoire for whatever reason. So I'm going to put myself into the position knowing that it's going to fail, and I'm going to get squashed and smashed and destroyed in training over and over again so it can be good in 8 months.
Yeah.
And then once you get it to a certain point in 8 months that it's usable, well, now it's probably only usable on the people that you have a significant skill advantage over.
Mm-hmm.
So it still sucks.
Sure.
So now you have to go back and you have to pretty much do that same process again with the next level of guys.
Yeah.
And then you have to do it with the same, again, you have to level it up, level it up, level it up. And you might invest 2 years of your life on this thing, and then you find out after 2 years of your life that it actually, you went down the wrong path.
Yeah, it's not really the technique for you.
Yeah. And that sort of stuff happens all the time. And like, the thing is, like, we talk in jiu-jitsu, there's this thing where it's like, it gets made fun of all the time, but there's a lot of truth to it, is that people get their blue belts and they disappear.
Yeah.
So like, the jiu-jitsu is this new, fun, exciting thing. It's like dating somebody new, you know, being in a new relationship. And it's fun and exciting. And there's all this like, oh man, everything is this huge event. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, well, we've been to that same like restaurant 5 times. I don't really like that restaurant. I'm kind of over it. Let's go somewhere else. You like trying new restaurants. I don't like trying new restaurants.
The routine starts to settle.
You know, and you know, like that's the thing. It's like a long-term relationship works out because people are able to look past that.
Sure.
But lots of people can't look past that. And that's why there's lots of short-term relationships.
Yeah, so you have to have a long-term relationship with martial arts. It can't just be those superficial fun parts of training that catch you.
Yeah.
You have to have an appreciation for kind of like the struggle. of it a little bit more, that that's the point at the end of the day, is that you're trying to improve yourself. And, you know, that's what, it's certainly what I come to love about the martial arts. I think that you would agree, is that it's just that constant challenge of your own limitations is what makes it kind of meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this again in a prior episode, the whole pursuing your passion sort of thing.
Sure.
I think that, like, there has to be something that's driving you to stick with it, mm-hmm. or you stop. And that's why probably in karate, it's probably a lot more common that people get their black belts and then they stop.
Sure.
Just because the time frame that it takes.
Yeah, 4 years, you know.
Yeah.
It's not as short. You know, I would say the vast majority, you know, of people that start, of course, don't make it that far. But yeah, it's definitely the kind of thing. It's like similar to, you say, the blue belt. That, you know, a lot of people that maybe don't really have, you know, like a real love for it, but, you know, they kind of like it and they appreciate the martial arts. They kind of set that goal that, you know, okay, I want to get to that point. And then once I've accomplished the goal that I wanted to accomplish, then I'll decide whether or not I continue. I think that is often when a lot of people will step out.
Well, I used to have this conversation all the time with my friends who are musicians. And it's like, how many things have, like, we'd have these conversations, not really necessarily talking about ourselves, but just other people in general. Sometimes it'd be about ourselves. Like, how many things in your life have you dedicated yourself to for 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
How many things in your life have you dedicated yourself for 2 years? How many things have you dedicated 5, 10 years? And it's like, well, obviously, if you're a touring musician, you've probably dedicated yourself to your instrument and playing music for a long time. So, like, it's like, even like when we were like 22 years old and first starting to tour and all our friends were starting to tour and travel the world playing music and make records and stuff like that. Well, most of us had already been playing our instruments for 10 years.
Sure.
You know, starting at 12, 13, 14, and then getting to the point where you had been in some bad bands.
Yeah.
And then played with people that you realized, like, didn't, like, some of, they just didn't take it as serious as you did.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, now you've been playing your instrument. You've been dedicated to that for 10 years. Well, how many people do you know that are like 22 years old that have been dedicated to something for 10 years? But just period in life, you start to break it down. You're like, most people try something and they give it up. It's amazing if they make it to a year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it's like,
and I think we've all had experiences like that. Plenty of times you try to pick up. I tried to pick up a hobby and not gone far with it. You know, it's just normal. And it is interesting to kind of delve into that and analyze, you know, exactly why, you know, like, kind of what makes a person stick with something.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know what the answer is, but
yeah,
like, I mean, I think that if you ask the average person, they pretty much, outside of education, going to school, which is something that for the most part they'll almost feel like, oh, I have no choice, and if I want to get ahead of life and be a functioning part of society, I have to go get an education. I had to go get an education. They don't have a whole lot.
Yeah.
Like, usually, like, the two things that you'll hear from the average person, it's usually school, education, and then probably next up is, like, a girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife, fiance sort of thing.
Group of friends, maybe, you know, people you kind of long-term friends.
Yeah, yeah, that's about it. Like you ask them, you're like, so what have you done? Like, obviously, people that have played sports at a level where they played collegiately or professionally, they had to probably dedicate a decade of their life to that sort of thing.
Yep.
But, yeah, you just, you find when you ask those questions to people, they don't have a whole lot.
Yeah.
So it's like, why would martial arts be any different?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
Yeah, let's take a short break and then we'll be back. All right, we're back.
So I wanted to go back to you know, what you were talking about, developing new techniques. I think that's a interesting kind of thing to talk about with training. Give you a little bit of a striker's perspective on it. It's something as a teacher, especially, that I feel like I deal with constantly, is that, you know, the first step when you have a student that comes in is I teach them the basics. Of course, I would say for karate, especially my style of karate, Tung Soo Do, Korean karate, the basic techniques, like kind of the foundation that I would say everything is built on, are straight punches and round kicks.
All right.
So that's pretty much what everybody, yeah, yeah, you know, and that's, and obviously even, you know, for myself, I would say like those are, that's my foundation too. My straight punches and round kicks, there's plenty of the techniques you kind of add onto that to make you a more versatile fighter. But I would say that in 6 months to a year, you know, I can get most students to the point that they're using straight punches and round kicks, you know, pretty well, like effectively, you know, there's plenty of things they can improve, but they have a good handle on it. It's a usable skill that they have. And they often, I often find that the students have a, can sometimes have a lot of trouble kind of breaking out of that bubble. When they're sparring, yeah, they're only really comfortable throwing like some variation, some combination of straight punches and round kicks.
Yeah.
And even though in their training, they're practicing all kinds of other stuff, learning other techniques, and maybe they're even, you know, develop some ability with those techniques, like they hit a target with it,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, like before. But to get it into sparring is something that's a big hurdle for them to get over.
Yeah, because probably what's going to happen is the same thing that happens no matter what the martial art is or the skill yep. is. You're going to fail.
Exactly.
Yep. And you're going to fail in front of another person and possibly fail in front of your instructor who's watching you. Potentially that has an impact on how you get promoted.
Sure.
So it's like this terrifying thing.
Depends
for lots
on the teacher,
people.
Of course. But
yeah, yeah.
I tell my students that it's like, you know, you can't be afraid to fail. You know, it's like that's what training is for.
Yeah.
It's like that's what you do. If you have to take that risk, that's how you develop a new technique. You have to take that risk. You have to understand it's probably not going to work out. But it's not a fight. It's just training. You're just sparring.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
isn't a real fight. You guys aren't really trying to hurt each other, but
you're
trying
preparing
to
yourself. That's what, yeah.
Exactly. You're trying to develop your timing and your ability to use this technique. So, you know, I think that's one that can be difficult for people often, that, you know, that they pick up the basics, they develop them to a certain level, so kind of some, you know, understanding of striking, you know, how to strike,
yeah.
stuff like that. But then to start, you know, to go further with it, where it's like learning how to strike in different ways beyond
yeah.
just those fundamental techniques, I think that's where the struggles, you know, really start to come in. And where if people aren't really motivated and it isn't something that, you know, there's something, you know, to the training that is really engaging for them, that they're
yeah.
willing to, you know, to fail, to push through and push through that struggle and to try to make the technique work and have it fail and keep going until they get it to a point that they can use it. If they're not willing to do that, they'll get burned out.
Well, this is what I honestly, and this is kind of big picture of what this conversation is in my mind and why I even wanted to have this conversation with you, is that
yeah.
I actually do think martial arts are for everyone, but only the fundamental part of each martial art.
Okay.
Once
yeah.
you get past the fundamentals, it is no longer for everyone. I think that any person can walk into an environment of any martial arts school, no matter, we're talking about, it can be the roughest, most competitive school in the world. It can be the most extreme self-defense school. It can be at the McDojo. It can be whatever.
Yeah.
Once you get past the fundamental part, the fundamental part's for everybody, because usually if you're coming to the fundamentals, it's new to you, it's exciting,
yeah,
it's all fun, you're going to find something, you're not really going to be testing yourself against the higher end people in that environment, and the higher end people in the general area, and then the higher end people in the region, and then whatever, the world, you know, country, whatever, however you want to break
yeah.
it down. But like, there's a certain point where it doesn't matter what you came there to train for.
Yeah.
You have to take the next step up, and the next step up is usually the part where it's not fun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, well, if this isn't fun and this is becoming like a chore and a task, or it's like I have to let myself get destroyed by these people that are so much better than me, or I have to like put my ego aside, and even though I know that I can beat these people with this stuff, it's not going to help my long-term improvement, so I can deal
sure.
with the people that are better than me and get me to the next hump. That part's not for everybody, and that's why you see the drop-off.
Yeah.
And that's why you see...
I think that's a really cool take on it. I think I haven't really thought about it that way before, but I think that's a great way to put it, that you're right. It's kind of like anybody can kind of come in with a martial art and learn some stuff and get started, but
yeah.
there's... But most people reach that burnout point. They're like, okay, you know, it's like, yeah, I've learned some cool stuff. Like, I might appreciate it a bit, but I'm not trying to go there with it.
The next hump is just, that's the part. Like, yeah. If you walk into the most competitive school in the world for whatever martial arts, even MMA,
yeah,
and you're like, hey, I'm a beginner, I'm just coming in, I want to get in shape a little bit, learn some self-defense, that first year, 2 years, probably be a ton of fun.
Yep.
And then that first year or two is going to pass, and then it's kind of going to be like, you're going to be questioning, where do I go from here?
Yeah.
What do I do next? I'm kind of feeling like I'm just like, yeah, I'm in a holding pattern. Nothing's changing. I'm not improving. I'm not getting in any better shape. What do I do? And it's kind of like, you're going to be faced with like, hey, well, you should start maybe going with these better guys in training.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should think about competing.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just like, you know, drop in here and there and train with these other people that are rough and will help you improve. And for lots of people, that's not their thing. They don't want any part of that.
I would say, and you know, it's always very dependent on the individual, because, you know, I'm sure you have this in jiu-jitsu too. There's also a lot of people who don't make it past their first class, you know, so there is a hump in even getting started.
Yeah, of course.
I would say that, like, so that's kind of the first one, is when you don't know how to do anything, right? It's like a struggle just to do anything at all. That's often the hardest part, is really just getting started. But once you get past that initial kind of like that first barrier, that hump where you get some momentum going in training, you pick up some stuff and you're able to do it, then I'd say that I would agree that there's a period in there. Let's say if you make it like past like the first, you know, 3 months or like 6 months of training, then like the next couple of years, you're right, are probably kind of heavy on the enjoyment side, because so everything's new to you. But then you eventually hit that other barrier where it's just like, well, do you really want to, you know, go farther with this? Well, you got to start challenging yourself, because you're going to get bored here.
I mean, I find for me personally, because we've talked about this a lot, but I'm usually at a physical disadvantage for the most part when training with other adults because of my size. I am faced with tough decisions all the time because I'm like, I need this stuff to improve. And these are the reasons why I need this like stuff to improve on, so I can like be more competitive with the guys that are better than me. I need it for my window of competition, which is closing more and more every day as I get older. But like, you know, I need it for my competitions that while I still compete. So it's like, I need to make sure I'm working on these techniques. But there's a certain level where I'm like, these guys are significantly bigger than me, and I know they're aggressive, so they're a risk to my safety.
Yeah.
So then I have to almost be like, I know I want to work on these techniques, but I can't, because if I work on these techniques against this group of people, I'm going to compromise my safety, and there's a good chance I'm going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And so it's like almost like I'm like, I just got to shut the game down. And I'm like, okay, so I'll view this more as like a self-defense situation where it's like, I'm going to let that person lead the way. I'm going to be more defensive and worry about more safety things and be like, okay, would I be safe from getting punched here? If they aren't coming forward against me right now and they're like, they've got 80 pounds on me and they're not coming forward, I wouldn't go chasing them if it was a fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so again, the goals have to change within in that context. But again, that's all can be super frustrating.
Sure.
It can be extremely frustrating. And I just think I think that the average person walks into a martial arts school and they're like, I just want to learn self-defense or I want to get into shape. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody else says. Like, I think that that's the bulk of your people that are training. They're coming there because they're like, hey, I want some self-defense. I'm afraid I'm going to get into a fight or attack, or I did get into a fight and attack, and now I want to have some skills. Or somebody's just like, hey, this is just my way to stay in shape.
Yeah. Yeah, self-defense, I think, often can be a funny one too, because, you know, it's just one of those ones where it's like the vast majority, like the way that it was put to me by Ian Abernathy, I think was a really good way to put it, is that any kind of physical fighting skills are like, they're a small part of self-defense, all things considered. It's literally like, if you find yourself having to fight your way out, it's like everything else went wrong. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people. You failed to recognize, you know, early on that you're in danger and leave. You failed to de-escalate the situation to kind of, you know, talk somebody down or something like that. It's literally like the worst case scenario. It's the end. Yeah. And that's why, and it, of course, it depends. We live, of course, in a pretty you know, safe community like that. And there definitely are, you know, there's a wide range of you know, the different situations that people have to face, you know, all. But for me personally, the whole self-defense thing is that, and for the people I'm teaching too, I kind of recognize that the vast majority of the time, preventative measures are going to be far more effective than any physical, you know, fighting that you teach them. But it's, of course, it's good to have those things in case you really need them. You know, I found myself in a situation like that once in my life. You know, I think almost 30 years old. It's like, that's realistically what you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends who you are and how you live your life. But I mean, that's a, you know, there's a kid who trains with me and I think she might be like 13. She asked the question, we were working on something. She's like, what if they push you into like a closet or a small room and you end up in with them in there? I'm like, well, the sad reality is that you made a bunch of mistakes before that because they shouldn't have been able to isolate you like that. Sure. And I'm like, unless they physically overwhelmed you, that's the only way they should have been able to isolate you like that. And I think the response was, well, what if they were your friends? And I was like, your friends wouldn't do that to you.
Yeah.
So you need to start to reevaluate whether these people are really your friends or not.
Better friends.
It's a rough situation. Yeah, with lots of these things with the self defense stuff and because you don't want to victim blame.
Sure.
You know, like that's important because you know it's not your fault, but like at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
At the same time, you have to always be aware. There's
I
haven't read that there's a book. That's a what is it called? I can't remember. I haven't read it, but I know a bunch of people that have. Which it's something like, what is it? The Gift of Fear or something like that.
Yeah, I've read that book. That's a great book.
I haven't read that book, but I know that people that have read it have told me that a large part of that is talking about trusting your instincts, and intuition. Awareness. Yeah,
yeah. And they say that you just get a feeling, kind of about somebody, and often, and the author. It was several years ago that I read that book. I remember it was a very good read, and he just illustrates a lot of stories of people that found themselves in very dangerous situations. And they said that, I remember, I think it was in the introduction to it, he said that a commonality you'll find between a lot of these stories is that these people that survived, you know, like very dangerous situations, you know, situations where they easily could have been killed, it was often because they said that they just had a feeling and something put them on guard that they realized, and that was what ultimately ended up saving their life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've read other things about it. I think some of Rory Miller's books address this, and it's really interesting stuff about, you know, kind of delving into the neuroscience behind, you know, things like the fight or flight response. And it's like, they're highly evolved survival mechanisms that we have that are really interesting when people study them and try to figure out exactly how they work. You know, like something like intuition, you get a feeling about something. It's like, it's hard to even define what gives people those kinds of feelings, but there's some evidence to suggest that they are reliable, though, that it's like, this is a survival mechanism that you have within you, that you have a very fine-tuned sense of danger often if you're kind of, you know, if you listen to it.
I agree with all that. Getting back to kind of the bigger picture, though, of the conversation.
Sure.
I think that martial arts, again, I really do believe that the fundamental parts are for everybody. I think anybody can come in. For the most part, you know, have you ever heard of, I think his name's Kyle Maynard.
Yeah.
So Kyle Maynard trained actually with, I believe Christian might have actually been trained with him while he was at Atos, but I know he trained at Atos for a little bit. And he's done a bunch of other crazy things. Like, I think he tried to climb, which mountain did he try to climb? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think it's Kyle Maynard. I don't know what you're talking about.
So he's like,
about
he's missing both legs and both arms.
Oh, okay.
And I think, so he said, I forget which mountain he tried to climb. It's one of the big ones.
Sure.
But like, he said something like, he was like, the biggest lie ever told is that anybody's capable of doing any person is capable of doing anything. He's like, that's the biggest lie ever told. But I do think that most people are capable of doing anything. You know, it's just their own will and desire. You know, like...
I don't know if I would agree with that most people are capable of doing anything. I think we're all capable of doing a lot of things, but it's highly individual. You know, it's like you can't, and that's what you got to figure out.
It depends. Again, it's not, so obviously it's not anything. Like, I can't, if I want to go play quarterback in the NFL, it probably was impossible.
Yeah.
I wasn't given a natural physical gift to throw a football, but this is kind of like a much deeper conversation. Well, just because you couldn't play quarterback in the NFL, if that was your dream, doesn't mean that you can't figure out a way to do something related to that. Wow. And you know, we're kind of arguing semantics, but that's my personal view on it. So you found out that you didn't have the physical gifts to go play in the NFL. Well, why don't you put in the work to become the smartest, most intelligent person on teaching quarterbacking in the world?
Yeah.
Or why don't you go become a coach?
Yep.
Because that's what all these other guys did. Most of these coaches couldn't make it.
Yep.
Like I think Bill Belichick played at the college level, but I don't think he played at a good college.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, I'm just going to work my way up through the ranks. I'm pretty sure he started out on like super, super low, like old school in like the 1970s, splicing tapes together for a coach or something like that. In the 80s, you know, and then worked his way up the ranks. And there's lots of guys that in his organization where it's the same thing. Like, he kind of almost paid it forward. He was like, hey, I climbed up the ranks with nothing. And if you're willing to start from the bottom and you've got a good work ethic, you're willing to be here instead of going out and doing what everybody else is doing at 27 years old or 25 years old, then I believe I'm going to give you an opportunity.
Yeah.
I think it's actually, I could be wrong with this, but I think that Jim Schwartz, who's the defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm pretty sure he started out when Bill Belichick was in Cleveland, just as like as an intern, unpaid intern, post-college, putting together like videos so the coaches could study, and climbed his way up.
Yeah.
Started from nothing, and it's like when he could be out on a Friday night at a bar like everybody else is his age, trying to, you know, pick up somebody on a date or whatever and having drinks, he instead was like, yeah, I'm just going to stay up till 4 a.m. studying film so I have a better understanding. And hopefully I can, if I get the opportunity, I'll be ready to go.
Sure.
And yeah, of course, there's people that they put in all that work and it never works out. But
It's kind of like, and again, a much deeper conversation than we have time for right now, that's for sure. But it's the concept of there's some things about your life that are kind of, for lack of a better way of putting it, like preordained. You know, it's that they're out of your control.
Yeah.
It's just destiny about it. But, you know, the possibilities are still endless somehow, exactly where you could go with it. But you just have to kind of, your whole life, you kind of got to navigate that as to, you know, what is the path for you that you can take and how far can you really go with it? I think everybody has the capability to go far as long as they're on the right path, you know, but there are plenty of paths that just aren't going to be for you, you know?
Yeah.
I love your way of putting it, that the fundamentals are for everybody. I think that's the way that I will start thinking of it myself now too, that you're right. Is that like the fundamentals of martial arts are for everybody. I do agree that pretty much anybody can come into a school and they can learn those fundamental skills and get something out of it and embrace it. But it's sticking with it for a longer period of time and going deeper into it that's not for everybody.
Martial arts are obviously primarily are not sports, which again, this is a conversation we've had.
Yeah.
The foundations for martial arts is not as a sport, but martial arts are a sport.
Yeah.
It is probably the only sport in the world where you can go and like play, for lack of a better term, or train with the best guys in the world regularly.
Yeah.
You have access to the best guys usually in the world regularly because most of them own schools.
Yeah.
And if they don't own a school, that's probably because they're still in their competitive prime and they're competing. And then usually what happens is once they retire, they then are accessible for coaching and teaching and you have access to them. But even those guys that don't own schools, they're training somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to have the ability to have access to them.
Sure.
Now, boxing, that might not always be the case. that's a little more complicated. Same thing with wrestling and like the high end judo guys. Because
those are the ones that are kind of more, I would say, like the sports side of things.
Yeah, yeah, fundamentally. And those are the ones that there's some debate. Judo was definitely never gets questioned as a martial art, but wrestling and boxing obviously do. But
I wouldn't question it. I think they definitely are.
Well, you and I don't question it, obviously, but I think that lots of people do. Lots of people don't.
Historically, though, they've been promoted as sports, and they've been like that. The sporting parts of boxing and wrestling, I think, are much more like well established historically than they are in a lot of the Asian arts.
If I want to go, so there's two brothers that probably people that do jiu-jitsu are going to know called the Mendez brothers. They own a school right outside San Diego called Art of Jiu-Jitsu.
Chad Mendez?
No, Chad Mendez is a MMA fighter. So this is Rafa and Gui Mendez. They're two Brazilian guys. They're both they're part of the Atos Association, but they have their own school.
Yeah.
I could just take a trip out to California. Call ahead of time. Like, hey, I'm going to be here for these 4 days. Can I drop in and train? And they'd be like, this is the drop-in fee, and I have a legitimate chance of potentially rolling with them. I might not get to train with them.
Sure.
But I can definitely do at least a class with them.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll be like, hey, come and train. Chances are they're going to know I'm a guest, and there's a good chance they're going to give me the opportunity to train with them.
Yeah.
But they have a ton of other guys that are top guys in the world. I'm going to have access to them. I'm going to have the opportunity to train with them.
That's something that's definitely cool.
A lot of other sports.
It's cool about the martial arts, for sure. I would agree that it's kind of it's very open like that. You're right. You can kind of, if you're willing to travel. And again, there are restrictions there, you know,
how much people
can travel. But yeah, I mean, like, and I always talk about Ian, but Ian Abernethy is a similar kind of situation. He's a guy who teaches all the time, in my opinion. Well, I mean, really, he's one of the kind of authorities out there for, like, practical karate, you know, karate with a self-defense focus. And anybody that wants to can train with him pretty easily, you know. He travels a lot, and he comes around, makes himself, that's how he makes his living, too, but he makes himself very available to his audience. So it is something that's cool. Martial arts is still, and it's something that I always wonder about, if it will last forever, how open martial arts kind of is.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like, and it's a similar way, and we haven't talked about this much, I think, yet. Definitely another episode, we'll save it, but just the issue of how, you know, literally anyone can open a martial arts school. Like, you don't need any martial arts experience just to start running a business and say that you're doing it. It's an unregulated industry. Entirely.
Yeah.
And there are good and bad parts of that, you know. Like, I think there's a lot of bad martial arts out there, and I think that the fact that it's an unregulated industry, of course, in some ways aids that. But then there's also less barriers for entry with people like you and I that even want to pursue it as a career, you know. It's not like there's no permit process or anything you need to go through in order to. If you need a permit to be a freaking hairdresser, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well that's another conversation, which definitely is the question of should each martial art and the overall martial arts have some sort of regulatory board that actually oversees whether people have the right to teach, run schools and stuff like that. But that leads to a whole another deeper conversation about people's beliefs and stuff like that.
Yep.
Anyway, just to wrap up this conversation again, I think both of us are in agreement with this idea of the fact that the martial arts are for everybody, but probably only at the fundamental levels.
Yeah.
And then from there, probably not. One thing to keep in mind, guys, is that you can find us on Instagram, and you can go to anchor.fm and look up us as Motion Martial Arts, and you can reach out to us and kind of share what you guys think about this conversation, whether you guys think that martial arts are for everybody or not.
Yeah.
And
that's something that would be cool to add to future episodes, is if you write us, we have an email address, motionmartialartspodcast@gmail.com. Yeah. And if maybe there's a topic that you'd really like us to cover, or a specific question you'd like us to answer, we can make that like a beginning segment, or maybe a segment at the end of the podcast where we answer our audience questions, stuff like that.
Yeah, and probably as we get maybe guests that you guys are more familiar with in the future, because we've had some probably that you guys are aware of, like, we might put out some opportunity for you guys to send us some questions that you want us to ask these people as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thanks for listening again, as always, and get out there and train.
All right.